to the All Flesh, the No Ship Network podcast on the Hulu television series The Handmaid's Tale. This is a No Ship Network podcast. I'm your host, Steve.
And I am your host, Em.
If you like what you hear, head on over to noship.net where you can find all of the other podcasts that we do. If you like horror, we have Penny Dreadful and Ash vs. Evil Dead. If you like historical, we have Vikings. And if you're like us, we also have Twin Peaks. Contact us through Gmail and leave us a review on iTunes if you feel so inclined. Also, check out the TV Time app. It lets you keep track of all your favorite shows as well as participate in a community of like-minded fans. It's pretty cool. All right, without further ado, let's dig into the episode.
All right, we are discussing The Handmaid's Tale, Episode 9, The Bridge, directed by Kate Dennis, teleplay by Eric Tuckman. All right, so the handmaids line up outside of the Putnam household, and there is a ritual of child turnover taking place.
Yeah, that's what I had in my notes. It's like the handing over ceremony. At first, I thought they were baptizing the kid, but this, I don't know if this religion does that. So, interesting.
Yeah, it actually sounds very much like a baptism until you really listen to what they're saying and you see what's happening. Within the actual ceremony, they seem to honor the handmaids more than they actually do in their day-to-day living. They have the handmaids bow to themselves. Then they talk about, I think what the quote is like the Lord shows them kindness and they too will show the handmaid that same kindness. I don't know how you interpret that in the way that they have.
All I know is that Miss Putnam did not want to be showing anybody any kind of kindness. You would have thought somebody had to break her knees for her to just do that little curtsy that she did. It couldn't even be considered a bow. It was just minimally deferential in respect.
Yeah, she was ready to get rid of Janine, and she was just irritated that it was taking so long. I finally figured out where we've seen the actress who's playing Naomi Putnam.
Where have we seen her before?
Jane Silent Bob Strikes Back. She played Jason Mewes' mother in the flashback scenes.
Oh, okay. When he's just a little baby right outside of the quick stop.
Yes.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah, because there was something distinctive about her voice and her face that I was like, oh, it's triggering my memory. And that's what it was.
If she had just said, you little shit machine, then you would have known it right away.
So Janine is reticent to give up Angela. And it's Mr. Putnam who, in the end, convinces her to do so.
Yeah, he seems to be like the voice of reason that she's listening to. Not that he's being reasonable in any way, shape, or form. But in her head, it's kind of, and we figure out why later on. I mean, we've already been told before, but then we figure out why she's just like, oh, okay, if he says it, then it's going to be cool because we're going to be a happy family.
I haven't thought about this at great length, but it occurred to me about the dynamic between a male who has a lot of power, happens even in this society because of financial reasons and positions also in employment and things like that, as you hear about in show business and various particular roles in society where men have a lot more power than women, that they're just predatory, womanizing men who take advantage of their powerful positions. It's got to be a really weird tightrope to walk. And I've never really tried to put myself in the man's shoes in that type of like situation before where I've thought about it and how to try to be manipulative to keep that up. That has to be really stressful even for him.
Yeah, but he's got to be acting all of the time because it almost seems like you'd have to just divide up your personalities and not quite be a split personality per se, but you'd have to show a certain face to your wife and to another one to your coworkers. Or maybe the same one, I don't know. But then one to her. So you'd have to be adept at moving around that. And then when all the people are in the same room, how do you act then?
You know? You have to be really skilled at dealing with people on the emotional level.
Yeah, you have to be a master manipulator. You have to have that charmy kind of confidence that people mistake for something good, which it can be if you use it in the right sense. But most people just, you know, fall prey to the lesser angels of their nature and use it to manipulate people for their own good. So,
but it seems like the payoff is not worth all the
stress. From the outside, it wouldn't seem that way. But something motivates people to do it because people, you know, there's the Bill Cosbys of the world.
Yeah, exactly. Because I'm just trying to think of like what examples I could give because this happens, you know, outside of Gilead. It happens in our time. And I mean, show business definitely comes to mind. Because I guess that's because that's the more like publicized cases. The high profile cases tend to be celebrities. So Janine makes her exit. She hugs Offred as she walks down the line and tells her not to be sad that he, being Commander Putnam, is coming for her. After Janine is in the vehicle, Offred breaks formation brazenly and asks Aunt Lydia if Janine seems okay. Aunt Lydia says that Janine is stronger than Offred thinks.
Yeah, and that she can be an example to everybody. That was pretty brazen of Offred to do that. She's kind of like, I'm not scared. I don't care. You know?
Yeah, that comes out every now and then. And there's another moment in later on in this episode where I thought she was pretty brazen too. I mean, outside of the fact that she's actually starting to work for Mayday, I mean, that obviously is just risk-taking, which is, you know, that's a different characteristic than the Offred in the book, because the Offred in the book never actually really actively did anything like that.
No, she didn't. No, we're way past the book now, which makes it more fun to view, because it's like, I feel like I don't have any more secrets that, you know, all the just the TV watchers who haven't delved into the book yet have. It's kind of nice to just be on the same page with everybody else.
So speaking of Mayday, we have Offred walking up to Alma and says she wants to help with Mayday. And Alma says that she has no idea what she is talking about and walks quickly away.
Mayday pop quiz failed. You get an F.
So did they really show that Offred was a little bit as frightened of this? I'm not sure if it really came across if Offred was as frightened of that conversation as she should have been.
That's interesting. I read it more as disappointment and confusion.
Yeah.
Like, I think she had gotten it through, or she had gotten it in her head that because of all the questions that Alma was asking back in the episode when they, when all the handmaids were being shown off and everything, that she was part of Mayday and she knows what's up, what's going down. And so when she asks her and she gets the rebuff, she's kind of like, she doesn't think like, well, there's 100 other handmaids standing here. Why am I going to talk to you about this? She's kind of being a little bit dense about
it. Well, she should also think, well, Alma could be an eye. And now I just outed the fact that I'm Mayday.
Yeah, that could, yeah. Or true. Yeah. I mean, you get paranoid living in a society like that, I imagine. That would run through your head if you're thinking right. But Offred has a tendency to be a little bit reckless, so.
Yeah. So now Aunt Lydia walks Janine up to the Monroe household. She's now going to be known as Of Daniel. Janine worries about how far away the house is, and she's referring to being far away from Angela and Commander Putnam. And Aunt Lydia says to go like an open flower, which is just disgusting.
A little bit too descriptive there, Lydia. I felt like this was when she hands her off and she says, okay, go up. These are nice people. You'll be fine. And she's like, well, this is just so far away. And like you said, it's obvious that she's referencing her child. And Aunt Lydia plays dumb. She's like, far away from what, dear? Mm-hmm. Like, how would you not know that? How could you not? I mean, maybe that's part of the process to where you're just supposed to ignore that kind of thing and keep pushing forward and get her up those steps so she can go get pregnant again. It's because that's all this is about.
Or maybe she wanted to make her say it so she could set her straight.
Oh, give her a reprimand and say, you know, that's not your child. You know, you've done your duty. Now you have to go do your duty again.
So now we have a scene where Mrs. Putnam and Mrs. Waterford are going out for a walk with a guardian. And a woman comes up and wants to look at the child. And I have to say, I don't agree with the way the guardian handled it, but it was a little bit shady how she started wagging her fingers in that baby's face. I think she's an Econo wife.
Oh, okay. That would be the first time that we've seen one. I mean,
We've actually seen women in gray like that before near the wall early on. I think it was when Off Glen Number 1 and Offred were walking. And I wondered if they were Econo wives, but they're supposed to have stripes like of every color in their clothing because they do everything, right?
Right. Yeah. They perform all of the functions. Because that's the whole point of calling them Econo, like you're getting this package deal. You know, hey, if she gets pregnant, she could be just like a handmaid. But she's also going to do your dishes like a Martha, and she's going to keep the household like an aunt and, you know, a wife too, and blah, 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 blah. So it's like everything all in one.
And so Gilead has really only changed for a few people.
Right, exactly. Because there's...
Because Econo wives are what exist right now.
Yep.
Except they also have a job on top of it.
So it actually had crossed my mind that this lady could have, you know, when she's wagging her finger, like she could have easily had some sort of poison or something like that and killed the baby. Mm-hmm. Why she would want to kill the baby, I don't know. But maybe just to thwart Gilead's plans or something. But that would be a pretty complicated scheme to get that close to a child, you know, and then...
It was strange.
Yeah, it was.
Behavior. So Mrs. Putnam is glad to be rid of Janine, and Serena feels that overall that Mrs. Putnam should be grateful. And Mrs. Putnam, being the persnickety woman she is, tells Serena that she should... that, well, I guess I shouldn't say that. She's not... She's persnickety throughout this whole episode, actually. But despite her persnicketiness, she notices that Serena seems down a little bit about not having a child. And so she says that she's sure her miracle will come soon.
She says, who needs that horrid girl like living with a feral cat? the amount of ungratefulness to this person who you just stole a child from is mind-boggling.
Stole a child from and was participating in ritual rape monthly.
People should just be more grateful in Gilead, I suppose, and less like feral cats.
So now we're seeing Av Glen number two and Offred walking, and Av Glen number two thinks that Av Daniel is so lucky. And I thought it was funny that she had to correct herself because she was so quick to correct Offred earlier on.
She's like, I'm Av Glen.
So we don't get to see what shop this is because I noticed that there were some like knitting needles out front. So I think Offred was probably picking up supplies for Serena. But as she's going in, Av Glen goes in first, and Alma's able to pull Offred over to the side, and she tells her that she needs her to go back to Jezebel's, and specifically to ask for Rachel at the bar. And Rachel is going to pass over a package, and she is told to not open it. And tonight would be a good time to go.
Classic example of be careful what you ask for, or be careful what you wish for, because you just might get it. Like, oh, you're part of the team now, and we need you to go back to Jezebel's tonight and get a package. Doesn't matter how, you know, figure it out.
I would like to see what's in this package, because I want to know why it's so urgent to actually put somebody's life on the line and possibly risk the whole operation. You're going to risk at least two operatives, a person at the bar and a handmaid, potentially. And if they get questioned, if they get questioned well enough through torture means, Alma's going to be given up as well. So
I don't know. It looked, I couldn't really make heads or tails of it when she got it at the end of the episode. It looked like a little 5-pound bag of sugar. But I mean, it's obviously got some sort of, I'm thinking there's information in there. There's some sort of information. Maybe there's plans or, you know, the Death Star plans. I don't know. It's something in there is important to Mayday, obviously. I mean, that's a no-brainer, but it's I think it's of an informational nature. I'm going to say that and see if I'm right.
I'm wondering if it's something that can be weaponized. Hopefully we see next episode. Because it is a lot to ask somebody like, oh, I just told you all this, do it tonight.
That is a hell of a lot to ask, and it's a hell of a lot to put on her shoulders, because, I mean, I know that they don't have a limited amount of people and patience and time to train people and stuff like that. All this has to be done covert when it can be done. But you work with what you have. I get that. But to just the first day that you're going to be part of this operation, get something that's vital to the survival of it. Yeah, I wouldn't put that on her.
So now Offred, because she's inspired, under the gun, more like it, waits for the commander outside of his office. He's questions of why she's there, because apparently this is a risky time for her to be there. I wasn't quite sure exactly. I'm thinking it's before evening, maybe like really late afternoon time frame. So the potential for Serena Joy to walk in is a lot higher. She has to face away from him until it really counts. And then she has to face him to really land the lie.
This was a great scene just to see how everything unfolded. And she thinks this whole time that she's playing him. But once he figures it out, he's really playing her, because she gets the package at the end of the episode through different means altogether. But I mean, actually, you could say that her trip to Jezebel's facilitated it, because she had to talk to Moira and tell her about the package. But ultimately, he's getting what he wants out of this more than she's getting what she wants out of this. But you can see it on his face when she's leaving the room and she's like, oh, okay. And you see that look go over his face and you're like, okay, he knows something's up. He knows that she's trying to play him. So somehow, some way, this is going to come out to his advantage.
Yeah, and he toys with her a little bit, because he says, we'll have to wait. And then there's a pause. And he says, until the house settles down. I guess at the first watch, I thought that, you know, it was meant to just play with the viewer. But knowing now that he suspected early on, he was also toying with her.
Yeah.
Definitely. Or maybe just seeing how she would respond if she would, you know, how urgent was this need for her to suddenly need to go back to Jezebel's. So after this moment, which was quite harrowing for her, as we see, she steps outside of his office to recover and actually worried that she would open her eyes and discover Serena standing there. Like, open your eyes. Oh my God. Oh my God.
Classic TV trope. And I thought they were going to go for it too. I was hook, line, and sinker. I was just like, oh shit, she's going to open her eyes and Serena's going to be right there. Like, gotcha. But thankfully, no.
But, you know, but it's such a great device to use because it's putting the thought in your mind that the potential for them to be caught is nigh. And so it's creating that tension that's slowly building over this episode. And then it culminates in what we see with Serena going into his office at the end.
You're right. That's played greatly for effect. That's a really good point.
So now the commander and Offred flirt in the back seat. And apparently Nick just needs to chill out.
This seemed, that was kind of funny to get Waterford to be like, yeah, Nick, just chill out. It's like, what? It's so out of place and out of character. And, you know, because Nick is like, sir. And he's like, yes, Nick, what? And he's like, we're coming up on the checkpoint. And he's like, oh, you're just no fun. Nick, just take your shirt off, Nick. Have fun with us. You know what I mean? Let the wind blow through your hair. Roll down the window. Live a little. Like, Waterford wants him to be in like one of those goofy ads you see that actually run on Hulu sometimes when you're watching this show of like the perfumes and you have some supermodel looking guy running through the streets of Paris to find nothing. It's like that's how he wants Nick to be as a driver. Just carefree and, you know, supermodel-y.
With cologne on. So now in the elevator, the commander says that they are going straight up to the room. And she says, well, I thought, you know, we'd go to the bar. And this Nick takes note of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Deb, you can see it on his face. He's just like, oh, yeah?
Yeah. And as they walk away, Nick cautions the commander to be careful. I think he actually really means this message for Offred. Because he says, you know, this was such short notice. You don't know who's actually all going to be in there tonight.
It's a good point. You're right. I think he does mean it for her. But, you know, he could probably mean it for him. For Waterford as well, because even for looking out for her, because it's just like, if he gets in trouble, then what happens?
I think he heard her say that she would like to go to the bar. He's wondering what she's up to, because this is out of character behavior. Mm-hmm. And so he's worried about her next step. And so I think he's putting that warning out there, and he conveniently suggests it to the commander. And which helps, you know, promote his pseudo loyalty or his apparent loyalty. But he's actually saying that to Offred. So Serena is knitting a baby blanket and then she wraps it up, I think, in some sort of like herb, maybe as a way for scent or maybe to protect it from moths or something like that. I'm not sure. And she places it in the chest with other baby knitted items that she has made over time. Next, we see Rita finding Serena looking for the chamomile in quotations.
Which is right here. Quick joke. What kind of drinks is Rita making? Margaritas.
Martha Rita's.
Martha Rita. Oh, even better. You one upped my pun. Awesome.
So Serena asks Rita if Offred has asked for her napkins yet. So, you know, she's frustrated. We just saw her knitting a baby blanket. She's just ready for all of this to end. And so she can move on with her life with a child. And Rita says no, but it's not really her time yet. So it's possible that she could still not need those napkins down the road. And then Rita, knowing what Serena was really looking for, suggests maybe that she should fix her drink with something that has more flavor to settle the soul. And then Serena says, go ahead and make two. And then they talk about Mrs. Putnam's complaining, and Rita tells of her own son who died in the war. And Serena is humbled by Rita's son's sacrifice. She's assuming, anyway.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. She's assuming that he was fighting for the side of Gilead.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Do you think she chooses to assume that openly just for the sake of keeping the conversation polite and moving on with the conversation?
That's a good question. I really don't know, because I thought about it from a couple of different angles, and I'm kind of wondering, like, okay, maybe she's assuming, but maybe the Marthas are a group that's done kind of like the aunts. There's a certain amount of like volunteerism that mm-hmm. goes with it, whereas the Handmaids are completely different.
Yeah.
So if given that assumption, which I don't know is true, I'm just assuming, but given that assumption, I would imagine that her son is on the side. And they didn't give you any visual obvious things that would let you know that there that it was contrary to that. So
see, that's what I want some backstory on too, is like, how does one become a Martha? Is it by choice, or were they forced into this particular role? I imagine there's probably more variation in that particular trajectory. Some people probably do volunteer, and some are, it's against their will initially. Yeah.
Which, just like any job in Gilead that have people doing that they don't want to be doing, it's dangerous. Childbearing, cooking your meals. It's like, you put the wrong people in these spots, bad stuff's going to happen. I like this scene for two reasons. The first reason being, like what you said, it ratchets up the tension another notch, because as far as who's going to get caught and when, because when Rita comes in, she's like, I thought I heard the commander coming in. I thought he might be hungry. She's like, the commander's in his office.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, he's not. You know, so you think, you go from there thinking that Serena is going to go looking for him.
And but, she's actually digging for something when you see her in that scene.
Yeah, yeah, true. So yeah. So it's like this, the tension keeps getting subtly elevated. Yeah. It's almost like Hitchcock directed this episode or something. And then the fact that these two were able to have this heart-to-heart conversation, not necessarily as equals, but as people, as women in a situation, and they just had a drink together, and it did a lot to humanize Serena further. So all of these people who are thinking that maybe she is on a redemption arc, and we're going to get to see a little bit more of her humanity, here's another push in that direction. So I was happy for that.
Hopefully those of us will not be disappointed.
Yeah, really.
Because once that hate faucet's on, it'll be on. That disappointment will turn it on. So now at the Monroe's household, the ceremony does not go well, as you would expect after Janine's giving up of the baby. I mean, I don't know why they... It just seems like you should give people time in that scenario. You know, yeah. You go from one extreme to then, and then you're just supposed to forget.
Here's something that I wonder about, too. There's speculation about some of the commanders being sterile. Obviously, Putnam wasn't sterile. So if they know that Putnam's not sterile and they know Janine can have a kid, why are they kicking her out of the household? Why don't they just leave her there so they can keep making babies? It's a sure thing. Why pawn her off to another household, so another commander?
Probably so there's no attachments developing.
That's probably right. But I was going to go with well, that's probably it, actually, is just so there's no attachments. I think you're right.
Mm-hmm.
But my backup was going to be because I think it is, there's, like we talked about before, there's the sexual element of it, too. So there's something in it for the guys. It's not, so it's kind of like they want the variety of a different, because if they were really just about the making as many babies as possible, you get a surefire thing and you stick with it, because that can keep happening, you know? My mom has seven brothers and sisters. You know, it's like that got figured out, and they kept going. There was a theme there. So it either it's about the attachment, or it's about the wink wink nudge nudge between the commanders and the sons of Jacob when they, you know, concocted all of this and said, yeah, we're just gonna keep passing them around like these women are trading cards or something. So
I'm thinking it's because it makes the wives more amenable to the whole situation.
If yeah, that probably helps.
They move them out as soon as they can after the baby, and if, you know, after probably a certain period of time of raising their child, they probably bring another one in to have another go.
So, yeah, but you're absolutely right, though. They should have some sort of, like, little, I mean, just a hiatus, you know, put them up in a nice cottage somewhere where they can do whatever they want to for 2 months or something like that before you bring them to their new posting. So... But no, it's just right to the next house. Get pregnant again. Go for it.
So Janine reacts like I think all of us imagine how ourselves would react, you know, if we were put into that situation. Also, thinks she has feelings for Commander Putnam. She just wants all of this to go away and go back to what she had.
This was the reaction episode for sure, because this is, like you said, how every woman would think that she would want to react. And as a guy, I'm, you know, trying to, it's hard for me to get into that headspace and put myself in that situation because I'm a guy, not obviously not a woman. So, but you would think that's what you would do just as a human being, being in a situation where you don't want to be like that, where you just start kicking, get the fuck off of me.
Yeah.
So it was nice to finally see that.
And so now we have Offred faking it for the commander at the hotel that Jezebel's is located in. And he wants to know if she liked it and tells her she doesn't have to be quiet here. And, you know, she has to go to the bar. And then he asks why. And she says because she likes the way people treat him, that they're all, that they all act impressed. And he tells her that he isn't dumb. He knows why she wanted to come there. And he's made some arrangements, and we discover that the arrangements were Moira, and it looks like he was hoping for some lesbian action, and Offred nipped that right in the bud right away.
Yeah, I think he was too. I think that's obviously like his thing. And he just, is it just me, or have they ratcheted up his creepy element every episode consecutively?
They're unveiling it more and more.
Okay, yeah, I guess that'd be a better way to put it. They're showing you a little bit more each time, because yeah. This was just like when he comes up to her and puts his arm around Moira and he's like, I know Ruby too, you know, like intimately. And you're just like, oh man, really? And then you're thinking that, come on.
Yeah, because you don't, this scenario does not happen in the book, but we know in the book that Moira has been with him at Jezebel's, and she's like, it was not a good experience for her.
Yeah, he probably, like, the heavy implication being that he gets, like, sadistic or something, you know, and he's just not.
Was that what it was?
That's what I felt like.
Okay. But
because Moira had been with him, so, and she was saying that to Offred.
So, as you said, that Moira is now known as Ruby, at least by the commander, and he says how he observed them seeing each other the last time they were at Jezebel's, and he tells Offred to relax, I did something nice for you, and he tells her, thank you, Fred. And she says, thank you, Fred. And that's very brazen of her, because the way she said it, the tone in her voice was unmistakable.
Oh, yeah. She's just like dripping with sarcasm.
Mm-hmm. And I thought that was excellent acting by Elizabeth Moss. That particular, I mean, she's a great actress. We all talk about it. Everybody knows it. But that particular moment I thought was super impressive. And so now we're back down into the kitchen, and we see that Martha that we had saw last episode, who is friendly with Nick. After some questioning, she's telling him no, there's no hint of rebellion at Jezebel's, and she warns him that, you know, a driver like him that keeps poking around is a good way to get strung up on the wall, good way for him to get attention, wrong attention, and be punished for it. And she somehow picks up on the fact that he has love for this handmaid. He avoids the subject and decides to eat the carbonara.
Which is incredible, by the way. It was incredible. That what this scene was interesting to me, because she says, like you just mentioned, that if he keeps poking around about a handmaid at Jezebel's, et cetera, that's a good way to end up on the wall. And then they show a guard looking ready to just, you know,
yeah,
grab somebody and throw them up against the wall. And I start thinking to myself, okay, obviously, these guys are both guardians, but Nick is a driver to a commander and an eye. So as far as, I think he just kind of acquiesced to that and said, okay, you've got a point. I'm going to sit down and eat the pasta and see if I can get more information from you, because I don't want to stir up any other shit or whatever. Because I think with everything that he's got in his back pocket, if he needed to get out of a jam, he could just be like, go talk to Price, you know? So, but he doesn't want everybody else to know that. So I guess it just makes sense that he would probably just be like, yeah, yeah, you're right. I'm just going to chill like they told me to in the car. I'm just going to be chill.
Well, I mean, who knows what kind of front he's putting on in front of her as well. So he's got to look like he's not something other than.
Yeah. He's got to keep up appearances all around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you and I are choosing to believe he's something other.
I believe there's enough evidence at this point. His relationship with Price, the way that like Price recruited him, and Price is at the very top. The fact that I feel like it's pretty clear that he's an eye, and he's a driver for.
I think he's an eye too, but
okay.
I'm talking about Mayday.
Oh, with Mayday, yeah. But see, he doesn't even seem to be doing any of this on behalf of Mayday at this point. I think he's just trying to protect Offred, because I don't know if he's been appraised about any of this, because you know they keep that stuff compartmentalized. But we'll see. I hope that comes out in the next episode. Or at least you get like a cliffhanger kind of.
That's why Alma knew that she was at Jezebel's, is because of Nick.
Oh, yeah. That would make sense. She's all pretending like she doesn't know. I don't know. They just know stuff.
She probably doesn't know where she got that information, but Nick's the one who handed the information over to somebody else who got the ball rolling, and now Alma has the information.
See, so you're like arguing against yourself here because you're providing a perfect alibi as to why he is part of Mayday, but you're still going, but we're just assuming that he's Mayday.
Yeah, because I don't think I've got concrete evidence yet. It's all circumstantial and wishful thinking, I think, on my part. But, you know, it would actually make more sense, you know, some of the things I've seen from him if he was Mayday.
Yeah, okay. I agree with that. But you drew pretty much a perfectly deductive reasoning line from point A to point B right there. And, you know, it's like that's how Alma knows that she was at Jezebel's because Nick was there.
Sure.
So there you go.
We shall see. We shall see. All right. Now back to Moira and June. Moira is freaked out that June came back to Jezebel's and is even more upset when June suggests that Moira grabs a package for her from the bar. June reminds her of the promise to find Hannah. And then she says, "Do not let them grind you down. Keep your fucking shit together." That's like a combo. She's mashed, you know, the previous Offred's quote with a quote from Moira herself from back when they were in the Red Center. And both of these statements are what has kept Offred going, I think, as well as the idea of getting Hannah. And so she's feeding it right back to Moira. And Moira says, "I was doing all right until I saw you again."
I thought this scene was nice because that's what friends need to do for each other. When one of them's weak, the other one needs to be strong, and then it comes back around, you know, because we all need somebody to lean on, as the song goes. So it's time for Moira to lean a little bit and for Offred to be the strong one, for right. June to be the strong one and to say, like, get your fucking shit together, you know, because it's the same tone that she was taking with her and the same tone she was taking with Janine at the Red Center, the whole nine yards, and it's coming back around. So that's what true friendship is about, just holding people up when they need it, you know?
So after Moira leaves, the commander comes back in the room, and Offred is bawling her eyes out after this encounter, and the commander is very callous and tells her to pull herself together.
What a prick. What an absolute prick. Like, I'm gonna let you see your friend, but because you guys didn't want to have a three-way, we're done. We're going home. I'm out of the shower.
His reaction to that is, I guess he just wants a fair weather hooker, huh?
He wants, it seems to me that he wants Offred to be amenable to everything, you know? He wants it, like they talked about in their early Scrabble conversations, he wants her, this life for her to be bearable. But he also, so he wants his cake there, and then he wants to eat it too, in the sense that he wants her to be like, okay, yeah, I'll play nice during the ceremony. And then I'll play nice all day long around your wife and pretend like nothing's going wrong. But then when you take me to this place and get me drunk, I'm going to act like, you know, the hooker from your wildest fantasies. And so you're going to get everything you possibly need out of this one person. And it's all for you, buddy.
Well, he gets angry because he doesn't like reminders of how bad the system is for a lot of people under its boot, such as all the handmaidens. And so anytime he sees anything like that, that's a reminder and it's a smack in his face and he reacts defensively.
So he'll pay lip service to that by saying better doesn't mean better for everyone, but he kind of doesn't want to stare that down. He doesn't want to see the effects of it.
Mm-mm. No, he doesn't want to see the effects of it. So now Serena encounters the commander walking up the stairs after his night at Jezebel's and she says, "It's late." And he says, "You should get some sleep." And you know, at first she's smiling when she says it's late. And then when he says you should get some sleep, her face falls a little bit. So I think she thought that he might have been coming upstairs to see her. She had her hair down and she had the, you know, the nightgown on like she did the last time they had sex. And I think she was hoping a reprisal of that moment. And if he was smart, you know, as far as like trying to cover his tracks, he would have played it like that. But he did not do that.
I like this scene the way it was shot because literally and figuratively, Serena Joy is holding the higher ground.
Yeah,
you know, morally and physically. So mm-hmm. it was a real, really nicely done shot, and it didn't sink in until the second time I watched it. I was like, oh, okay, yeah, she's got the higher ground. because all the cards are in her hand now, because she can use whatever information that she finds out later through searching through all his stuff for whatever she needs.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I like that. Good point. Good observation. So now Offred is now asleep and she's dreaming of Moira, Luke, and Hannah, and she is startled awake by Serena, and they have to rush to Janine, who is threatening to throw herself as well as her baby off of a bridge into cold water, which wasn't a very high bridge and the water didn't look very deep, but I guess that would make it that all the more dangerous.
I was a little bit confused. The fact that she lived kind of made sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like an act of finality, and I think she wanted it to be one, obviously. But, looking at the distance, I was like, that would hurt. But you'd have to land exactly right for that to kill you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, you know, they say if you hit water going at enough, like, velocity, it's just like hitting, you know, concrete.
Right.
But she's nowhere near that eye. That would be like coming from a plane or something like that. So, but then again, the way that she just did that belly flop with her arms extended out, she probably got knocked unconscious right away.
And yeah.
Then, you know, so it could have killed her, I guess. But I wouldn't have depended on that to kill me. Let's just say that. If I was trying to go out, I wouldn't have depended on that.
She probably didn't have very many options.
No. I get it. Yeah. Like that. That's like if that's all she could come up with at the last minute, you know, it definitely would have killed the child.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no question about that. But an adult woman, or just an adult in general, it's born out of desperation.
So Janine yells at Mr. Putnam about his false promises and outs him about their peripheral forbidden sexual relationship.
I believe she referred to it as all the freaky shit that your wife would do.
Right. Right. So they didn't get too descriptive, I guess, because this is Hulu, but let your imagination fly. I'm sure it's all encompassing.
Oh, yeah. Whatever you can think of and fill in the blanks is probably going to be like more graphic and just hit you in the gut than whatever they would have said, unless they got really creative.
And Aunt Lydia asks Offred to talk Janine down. Offred does really, really well. You know, she starts talking about how we're going to go out drinking together. We're going to get hammered. It's going to be me, you, Moira, and Alma. You know, we would go dancing. You know, it's heartbreaking at this point because Janine says, who would want to dance with me? And Offred doesn't even know how to respond to that in any positive way.
I would dance with her. I would dance with her.
Aw. Well, that's really nice of you, Steve.
she's the negotiator in this episode. She knew what to do. And, you know, like taking out the emotion and stuff like that just for a second and looking at this, Offred, I mean, I don't, she's got to think that, like, hey, I've got a little bit of like karma to burn here with these people. It's just like, look what I'm doing. You know, I'm the responsible handmaid. I did this. I did that. I'm the one who got her down. You know, like Aunt Lydia never would have called Serena to get her if it wasn't for the fact that, you know, just a couple of days previous, Janine had went straight to her and hugged her and then Offred asked about her and stuff like that. So it's, you know, just kind of, she gets the gold star for the day.
So because Offred couldn't really bounce back from that comment about dancing, Janine has now like become resigned to offing herself. And she asks Offred to come with her. And Offred says that she can't because of her own daughter. And then she says to Janine that you have to do what's best for your daughter. You have to give her the chance to grow up. So this is when Janine hands Angela over to Offred. She also asks Offred to make sure that Angela knows that Janine loves her. I mean, this is all telegraphing what she's about to do. You have to know she's about to do it. She says bye. She falls off and we see her red form floating in the water. Even the second time I watched this, I still cried, even though I knew.
I did too. And I remember halfway through it, like as she's jumping off, and then everybody, you see that classic TV movie thing where it's slow motion, everybody going, no, the tears were welling up. And I, like halfway through it, I go, she's not dead. You know, did you forget that, dummy? You know,
and I think it's because that there's probably some sort of science to choosing music, choosing color palette. You add the really stellar acting where people are responding to her falling off and everything, all of that combined just hits the right note or notes, and it's almost like you can't control it.
It's involuntary.
Yeah.
It's like hitting like the reflex muscle on your knee or a reflex nerve or whatever, and your leg bounces up, it's the same thing.
We mentioned before, it turns out she survived and she's comatose. And we see Aunt Lydia sits at her bedside. And, you know, we shall see if Aunt Lydia is right about Janine, if she's stronger than we all think, if she recovers from this.
I thought it was pretty stand up of Aunt Lydia to be in there sitting with her.
Yeah. And seeing her in there and also how I feel about Serena Joy, I'm putting forward that both Aunt Lydia and Serena Joy will begin rejecting this shit soon.
Yeah. They both have a lot to answer for.
Yeah. I think they're both like Lando Calrissian right now.
Card playing scoundrels or...
The deal is getting worse all the time.
Good point, yeah. This deal is getting worse all the time.
Now, so we see Commander Putnam. He's being taken away by the Eye. Serena says to Naomi maybe that he will only receive an admonishment. And Naomi being really upset over everything that's happened and unable to actually calm Angela. She tells Serena to worry about her own damn husband. Everybody knows about him, girl.
So, to crib a phrase, Naomi is being a boss-level shitlord at this point, big time. And she's going to shake that baby to death if she doesn't stop. That kid is going to that kid is gonna be like shaking baby syndrome. That's not calming any. That kid's having an anxiety attack, like full-blown, you know, amygdala on fire. Like, what is going on?
Yeah, you don't calm a baby by hissing in his face.
Serena Joy seems like, as far as we can see, the only person who's actually trying to help Naomi Putnam and to give her some good advice and be like, look, this is going to be hard. Hopefully your husband only gets an admonishment, but you know, some of this, hopefully none of it comes back on you. And she's like, oh, well, you think that this is my fault? And she's like, no, of course not. But yeah, maybe there's an implication that it could be, but I don't think that's where she was going with it, you know, but it's. Maybe there's some guilt on there's nothing that anybody did to this guy to where it could be anybody else's fault but his for his own behavior. Let's be clear about that. But, you know, she may harbor some sort of guilt somewhere along the way, and it's kind of coming out going, oh, what, you think this is my fault? You know, it's like you're too quick on the defense kind of thing.
So with Serena's suspicions being hinted at and amped or slowly cranked through this episode, we see the culmination of it, and she busts into the commander's office. What shall she uncover?
I like this little, I guess you'd call it a scene. It's not real long, but I like this scene because when she opens the doors, this is the first time that you see this place in the cold light of day. So it's kind of like the sun is coming in, uncovering and unearthing all of these secrets, and it's going to be exposed to the light. And, well, we know that she's going to find the Scrabble game. I mean, I'm sure she already understands that he has books in there and his hoard of alcohol. But more importantly, she's going to find fashion magazines. And I would suspect that underneath those fashion magazines is a little bit more intense fare as far as magazines are concerned. So I think she's probably going to find some pornography.
I think it's okay that he has books and Scrabble in there because he's a male and he could have those things.
Right.
It's the fashion magazines and whatever else. But what's also going to be a problem is she's going to find the cloak. She's going to find the rhinestone dress. She's going to find the heels and the makeup that he's been adorning Offred in.
Exactly. And she's going to know exactly what that's for because I think we're working off of the correct assumption that he took the last Offred to Jezebel's, and this caused some serious problems, and she ended up killing herself.
There's a lot converging, and this specific event is going to impact multiple things. Or I think we're also going to find out that Offred's pregnant, so that's going to stay Serena Joy's hand as far as what she may do in retaliation against the commander. And also, whatever we find out, what happens with Commander Putnam, if it's severe and if there's consequences, as Serena Joy has alluded to, that could happen to Mrs. Putnam, she's not going to want that to happen to herself either. So that will also affect, I think, how she approaches dealing with the commander and what she finds.
I think you're absolutely correct. And I think whatever happens to Commander Putnam, the severity of it will also affect Nick's next move, what he does or does not divulge to Price about Waterford's activities.
And if Offred is pregnant next episode, that's also going to affect Nick because he's going to think it's his.
And he'll probably be correct in that assumption because you know, there was probably more than a few ceremonies before they got together. So, so it's going to be all about the balance of, okay, how much do I do? What do I don't? Well, you know, what do I not do? And how that all works out. So this next episode, which I think will almost definitely leave us on a cliffhanger, is going to be great.
So now we're at Allflesh and Offred's picking up some meat and she's given an extra package and it was saved for her special. And they do cat kisses at each other. And those of y'all who do not know what cat kisses are, those are slow blinks. And that's how you can get your cat. That's how you know if your cat loves you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That is factually correct.
And that's how your rebellion is with cat kisses.
That's how you get your rebellion on.
So Offred steals away with this package and she kind of just like holds up next to a wall and she reads Moira's note, which says...
Moira's note says, "Praised be, bitch. Here's your damn package. XOXO Moira."
So speaking of Moira, meanwhile, Moira shanks a son of a bitch and steals away.
And I feel like an idiot because that was Moira's tool to get out of the Red Center in the first place, right?
Yeah.
And
the toilet shiv.
Here we are, her and Offred are meeting at the ladies' room, and it doesn't even occur to me to go, oh, why didn't she just make another toilet shank? I'm thinking she probably had to kill two people because she had to kill, like, whoever that was in the driver because it looked like she had a guardian uniform on.
I hope we get a depiction of what happened. I hope we actually get to see it.
And not to mention how many cars she probably had to try, how many SUVs she had to try to stick the key into before she figured out, oh, this is the one. Because she just, you know, they show her just come out of the building, get right into an SUV and drive away.
It was like the only vehicle out there, wasn't it?
I thought there was a line of them.
There was?
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't recall.
Yeah. Because you're so concentrated on her getting into the car and you're just like, ah, there she goes again. You can't keep her down.
I wonder if it's going to be difficult with the sign, because that was already a difficulty when her and Offred were trying to escape together and they couldn't. The signs are being changed. If they're still in mid-transition at this point or if they're in some other, not other language, but if they, since they don't put, they only put symbols up because they don't want people reading that aren't allowed to read, is she going to understand what the signs mean? Is she going to be able to navigate herself away easily?
That's a good question. That's a lot to consider. Or, you know, maybe she can park somewhere kind of like off of the road and wait for the sun to come up and get her bearings on direction and try to drive, you know, as much as she can north.
Yeah.
That's what I would try to do. But I mean, that carries its own risk because you're not getting far enough away from where you don't want to be, you know, so.
I mean, it's possible that she's probably developed a sense of direction just by being at Jezebel's and talking to people.
Yeah.
A general sense of direction as far as like if I don't know. It's all speculation. Hopefully we find out next episode. We get some idea. The next episode's called Night.
It'll be a bitter pill to swallow to see her captured twice, to have her have two escape attempts and, you know, to be brought back both times. That would kind of be shitty. So hopefully that's not the case.
Maybe she'll be the first to recover Hannah.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, but Gilead has to have Hannah.
Yeah.
Because if they got Offred, so...
It would be better and more effective for a lot of reasons if she could make it to Little America in Toronto. All right, so that concludes our coverage of this episode.
Okay, so we're not doing a feedback section tonight because we got so much feedback that we're going to have to actually have a separate feedback section that we're going to record Saturday night and have it to you sometime after that. Actually, one of you wrote into us four times, so in order for us to cover all of it, we need to divide it up. We had a lot of time constraints this week, so this was necessary.
All of the feedback was high caliber, and we wanted to make sure that all of it was read. We kind of toyed around with the idea of truncating it and maybe just kind of taking excerpts from certain letters, but after kind of, you know, thinking about that for a little while, we decided to go with this route.
It didn't feel right, so...
Yeah, we wanted to give everybody a chance to say what they wanted to say about this episode because a lot of all of it is insightful and articulate and it needs to be read. So,
all right. So this was a No Ship Network podcast. I am your host, Em.
I'm your host, Steve. Don't let the bastards
grind you down.